Okay, so in summary, in our day and age, emotion is all one thing, feeling is all one thing, but I believe it's biblically incumbent upon us that we learn to distinguish. Now let me say this right off the bat. This doesn't mean that it's going to be easy or that it's simple. It's not like we can just have a piece of paper, divide it in two, and list, okay, what are the affections and what are the passions? Even if we could do that, matching the word with how we feel is not always right. Well, what am I feeling right now? Am I feeling this or am I feeling that? It doesn't mean it's easy to distinguish. But I believe very strongly that it's incumbent upon us that we do, that we work through this, that we wrestle through this, that we struggle through this. Let me read you a couple more quotes by Jonathan Edwards. I would strongly encourage you to read that. It's not an easy read. Okay? But it's very good. An easier read along these lines, C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Four Loves that is very helpful in this regard. And it's a lot easier, and it's a lot thinner. Religious Affections is like this thick, you know. C.S. Lewis is small. The first chapter in that book is titled Men Without Chests. And this is what he's talking about. Is that the wrong book?
The Abolition of Man.
Yeah, okay. Four Loves is one thing. Abolition of Man is another one. Abolition of Man is the right one. I saw Mr. Riley go, So, thank you. The first chapter is called Men Without Chests. And that's what he's talking about. Men who are ruled by their koilia. They have no chest. They have no splankna. Now, he doesn't even use the Greek terms. He doesn't even use the terms affection and passion. But he's talking about the same thing. Okay? Edward says, the affections are no other than the more vigorous and sensible exercises of the inclination and the will of the soul. In other words, they are what will drive us to do what we know is right. The passions, if left unchecked, will always drive us to self-indulgence. The affections, as they develop and grow, will drive us to do what we know is right. So, obviously, belief is of first and foremost importance. But belief without affection is fruitless. Edwards, okay, that's it with Edwards. Okay, I already did the Greek biblical thought thing. Okay, so let's explore a little more. This is exactly what I was talking about yesterday when I talked about the difference between laughing because you've been tickled and laughing because you get a joke. I have two sisters, two younger sisters, and one time they were down in our basement and we had a pull-out couch. And for some reason it was out, so it was like a bed. And it was pulled out, like, and then there's a couch that was facing. So there's two couches facing each other. And the one couch was pulled out as a bed, so it was almost touching the other couch. And there was something on that other couch, like a box or something. And anyway, they were tickling each other and laughing. And it got to the point where it got so out of hand that Jennifer knocked, I forget which was which, but one of them, like, knocked the other one and ended up, like, kicking them in the face or something, and they fell into this box and there was blood everywhere and it was a mess. Is laughter, you know, laughter is a good thing, you know, right? But kept unchecked, this is kind of a silly illustration, but kept unchecked, we can be out of our mind with laughter. Okay? But there's a difference between laughing because of some kind of stimulus like tickling, where it's just merely base physical, there's no reason for it, you know, we talked about this yesterday, or laughing because you get a joke. That's the difference. Affections are not immediate. In our society of self-gratification, we want to feel good immediately. True biblical affections don't come immediately. Passions do. Remember Edwards said that? They're vigorous, they're immediate, violent, not violent in the sense of blood and gore, but just quick and sudden and powerful. So when somebody wants a feel-good kind of thing, well, then live by the gut. You get immediate self-gratification with the passions. But with the affections, there's got to be the element of the mind, because you have to understand the truth first. They're deep, they take longer to develop, but they all are also deeper and last longer. These are the things that will carry you through the difficult times. If you really have a trust in the Lord, a hope in the Lord, those are terms of affection. Trust, hope, confidence. Then when the trouble comes, you will still do what is right. But if all you are living for is some kind of fleeting feelings, a buzz, sweaty palms, tingly toes, hype, excitement, if that's all you live for, then when the trouble comes, what you say you believe just all goes out the window. Are you beginning to understand a little bit of the difference? Now, it's one thing to articulate it. It's another thing to really understand it. And I don't know that I really understand it yet. This is something that we all have to think through and grow and learn to understand. But the bottom line is, there are certain kinds of emotion that so overwhelm us that we are out of our mind. And there are certain kinds that help us to do what we know is right. The basic way to know the difference is this. And this is a good way to judge them. If it's something that you have to constantly keep under check, and that's pretty easy to recognize. Like if you let it go, it'll be a problem. Like your appetite, you've got to stop eating. Like sexual drive, like fear, like anger. Okay, those kinds of things we all know intuitively we have to keep them under check. Those are passions. Not wrong in and of themselves, have their place, but they have to be kept under the check of the mind. There are some things that you just can't have too much of. Love, courage, kindness, mercy. Those are affections. Now, we've talked about this a little bit, but let's explore this a little further. Obedience, right living, flows from the affections. The connection between the mind and the will are the affections. Let me give you an example. Let's use an example of war. Okay, you've got a soldier over in Iraq, and it's his job to guard a road. Okay, he's got this job. He's supposed to guard this road. Why is he there? He's there because of certain things he believes. He believes in freedom. He believes in justice. He believes in his country. Okay? But what happens when he's standing there guarding his post, he looks down the road, and here comes a band of angry insurgents? And they've got weapons and smart bombs and bazookas and the whole nine yards. What is it that is going to keep him from turning tail and running when he is confronted with that pressure? Is it his beliefs alone? Is he standing there at that moment with the insurgents coming toward him, intellectually running through his beliefs? Is that what keeps him there? What keeps him there? Courage, right? Something that took time to develop. It's a love for those beliefs. Because you know what? I believe in freedom and, you know, the American way. But I don't know at this point, without having developed my affection for those things to the level that he has, that I would remain there. I'd probably turn my tail and run. I've had a dream about that last night. I was in a house, and there was some guy breaking in, And I was a total coward. Like, I ran and hid. Oh, revealed the real me. But in war, what keeps him there, what brought him there is his beliefs. It has to start there. But what links his beliefs with keeping him there? It is his affections. Because otherwise, fear would overwhelm him and he would run. Fear, passion, koilia. Yes, sir.
Would you say that the affections would also, well, in essence, have something to do with, like, because obviously you don't get courage from your beliefs, you get courage from what you're standing for. Well, yeah, I guess
that's your beliefs, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk. That you bring up some good points though that we're going to hit in a minute, but that's good. Pressure is what reveals what's really in our hearts. Okay. I say that I love God. I say that I want to obey Him, and if everything is going smoothly, there's no reason to doubt that I do. But when something comes into my life that puts pressure on me, then the real me comes out, right? And if I am in reality being controlled by my koilia, by my gut, if my God is my belly, then I will just cut and run. I will give up the faith. And in that sense, I didn't have saving faith. But if when the pressure comes, I stand firm, you know, we're sinners, we're going to waver, we're going to fall, but then get back up. Biblical affection for what we believe is what keeps us there. And that is what saving faith is. Saving faith is not merely intellectual assent of the truths of the gospel. We were talking about that during the break. What is saving faith? Is it just intellectual belief? If that's the case, James tells us the demons believe, right? And tremble. Koilia. So what is saving faith? Saving faith is belief supported by trust, which is affection, hope, confidence, surrender, submission to Christ. Okay? So where does all this fit into our discussion of worship? And tomorrow as we discuss music and methodology, this will all come to play and we'll explore it even more. If worship is a spiritual inward response to God because of biblical truth about Him, well, what is it inward that's going on? What is that response? It is right here. And so when we're talking about emotion in worship, we need to ask what we're talking about. Because I would argue in some circles, when they say they're having responses to truth, it's really this. They're targeting this. This is what is running wild. For instance, you will often hear, and I will hear people say, the problem with the charismatics is that they're too emotional. I don't agree with that statement. I don't think they view emotion as important enough to take the time to distinguish between this. I don't think worship can be too emotional, as long as what we're talking about is this. Okay? Daniel says worship can't be too emotional. Okay, we gotta reuse the right terminology. And we're gonna explore how this fleshes out tomorrow. Okay, but let's get the concept. So, what is of utmost importance for us as believers is that we guard those things that are shaping our affections. And that is exactly what culture does. Music, movies, books, literature, poetry, media, these are all things that target and guard and shape our affections. As we sing together, a mighty fortress is our God, and Jesus, lover of my soul, and I'll worship the King, our affections are being shaped because we have been careful to discern this ahead of time. Our affections are being shaped by those kinds of things that the Bible says are noble, are right for expressing to God. As we participate in certain cultural activities, certain movies, certain music, certain literature, how are we being shaped? This needs to be the constant task of a believer. Now let's specifically talk about affection and worship. Okay? We say we need to love God. But what do we mean? Well, it's obvious what we mean, right? But there are different kinds of love. I love God. I love my wife. And I love pizza. But do I love all three of those in the same way? If I expressed my love for my wife in the same way that I expressed my love for pizza, she wouldn't be very happy with me, right? Well, in the same way, if I express love for God in the same way that I express it to my wife, is that right? Let alone if I express love for God in the same way that I express love for pizza. Or how about this? Expressing love for God in the same way that a teenage girl expresses love for a rock star. Not all emotion is created equal. And it is our job as believers to take the time and effort and wrestle through it and distinguish what is appropriate for expression to God and what is not appropriate for expression to God. But we should not just stop with expressions of affection and worship. We must remember that everything we allow into our lives shapes our affections. Some people are very careful about the kinds of affections they express to the Lord in worship, but are not so careful about what is shaping their affections in all of life. Okay, feasting on cotton candy 6 days a week and then expecting to be able to appreciate prime rib on Sunday. If you're feasting and allowing to shape your life in wrong ways 6 days of the week, then you can't expect to be able to express the right and appreciate the right things 1 day a week. How can we expect to have a biblical love for God when our affections are being shaped by the movies and music of pop culture? That's the question. So this goes beyond just worship. Now, we've raised a lot of questions, and they're not going to be all answered today, which is exactly what I want, because I want you to chew on this tonight. Okay? So, I wanted to explore for a moment, well, maybe not, but we'll hit this tomorrow. I wanted to talk a little bit about sentimentalism, because I think that is one of the kinds of passion that we tend to overlook in worship, but we will hit that tomorrow. Congregational worship, God-oriented, must be about God and to God. Doctrine-oriented, we must present God for who He is so that we can respond to that truth. Affection-oriented, and number four, congregational worship should be congregation-oriented. I attended a contemporary worship service once. There was a church in our town that had just started, and its slogan was, "A Different Way to Do Church." They met in a mall, and so a couple friends and I decided, let's go see what this is about. Went on a Saturday night, and the worship leader at one point, or several times, encouraged us to have a personal encounter with God. Good question. personal encounter with God. I don't know exactly what he meant. But you know, as I looked around, there were a lot of closed eyes. And almost this idea that it was me and God alone and not really paying attention to anything else around me. Goodbye. And this is common in contemporary worship services. Even churches that don't use contemporary music or are not considered, you know, contemporary or charismatic, propagate the idea that a worship service is a time for an individual to encounter God. But my question is that really what it is? What these people have forgotten is that congregational worship is not the time for a believer to worship the Lord individually. It is the time for believers to worship the Lord corporately. That's the whole purpose of it. There is a time for you to worship the Lord personally and privately and intimately, but not congregational worship. Congregational worship, as we have defined it, is a unified chorus of individual responses expressed publicly to God as a result of understanding biblical truth about God. So because of that, congregational worship needs to be congregational. Okay? I often tell my congregation, we are linking arms together in this service to join as one body with one voice in the expression of our worship to the Lord. It's not me and my personal encounter. It's us. And this is where there is this balance between the vertical, it is God-oriented, but that is not to discount the fact that it is horizontal. It absolutely is, by nature of it being congregational. Okay? So let's talk about how this will manifest itself, specifically in the music, but in other areas as well. Number one, the texts of the hymns. And we've talked about this already a little bit. This goes beyond merely the pronouns, I, me, my. Although what's interesting is in one Lutheran hymnal that I looked in, they changed, because they're big on this, I think almost to the extreme. They changed I sing the mighty power of God to we sing the mighty power of God. And I understand why they did it, because they wanted to emphasize the corporate nature of what was going on. Okay? So I don't think the pronouns are the issue. We sang a song this morning, Jesus, lover of my soul. But was the hymn congregational in nature? I think so. Why? Because it expressed truths about God and Christian experience that are common to all Christians. Jesus is the lover of all of our souls as believer. He is our comforter, all of us. He is our protector, all of us. What I'm concerned about is those kinds of songs that are very individualistic, focus on me and my experience and my trouble, instead of focusing on the congregational nature of what's going on. If this is congregational worship, it needs to be congregational. What about the music? Music in a worship service should be a uniter of the congregation, not a divider of the congregation. Right? There are some styles of music that are so connected to just here and now and this fly-by-night cultural trend, this fad, they're not congregational. You know, you have this in your pop music, and you've got the grunge rock, and you've got the hip-hop, and you've got the this and the that. And every one of these styles of music has its own individualistic culture, and it has its own style of dress, and its own way of acting. And it's all just the segmented, divisive kind of approach. Congregational worship shouldn't be like that. And the music that we use, congregational worship should be uniting. The music and the text should apply to all of us as a congregation. Does that make sense? We'll flesh this out specifically in application tomorrow. I guess it didn't make sense to that guy. but it's an important point. Okay, so four philosophical points here. Congregational worship, God-oriented. Congregational worship, doctrine-oriented. Congregational worship, affection-oriented. And congregational worship, congregation-oriented. Now, for tonight, I would like to ask you to read another one of Kevin Bowder's articles, mainly because they're short. It's only 3 pages. It's the last one on the list, Radical Monotheism, Part 3, What is Worship? And I think it will help to further confirm some of what we've talked about today. Okay? Radical Monotheism, Part 3, What is Worship? Now, you are going to want to know, you're going to want to be able to articulate with some degree of understanding, although obviously this is a new way of thinking, right? Affection, passion, ugh. But be able to articulate the difference. Okay? I don't know if I have it required here. And none of the required reading gets into that, but on my website you can do searches, and I've written quite a bit about this. So if you want to kind of further read, further explore, get a handle on it, be able to reproduce my words exactly so you get a good grade, you know, check out the website, and you can find some simple things there. But that's another thing you want to know. So know the difference between normative principle of worship and regulative principle of worship, scriptural support. I'll leave that for later. John 4, know its significance, be able to kind of exegete it and explain it. Be able to list the 4 philosophical principles and then briefly summarize them. And then describe the distinction between affection and passion and explain the significance of such a distinction for biblical worship. And again, tomorrow we'll be exploring that even a little more. Okay, now, I will let you go early, but let's take 5 minutes. Clarifications, questions, jokes. And I may tell you, you know, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Can't go into that today, whatever. But is there a particular clarification about something today? Yes.
Question I asked earlier. What I meant to say was, what would drive your affections? Other than, I mean, granted, you need beliefs, but what gives a man his beliefs? What is going to drive that man to have beliefs?
Okay. Number one, anybody can believe anything intellectually. Okay. But what gives us the affections is exactly what we looked at in chapel on Monday. And the context of a prayer reveals it to us. It is a work of the Spirit, strengthening our inner man. He works through the Word of God. And ultimately, it is a work of God in our hearts. Now, does that mean that we don't do anything? Well, no, absolutely not. Number one, we pray. You know, how can I have the right affections for God? Number one, ask Him for them. Number two, fill your life with the Bible, because the Bible is where you will nurture them. And then number three, guard your affections. In other words, don't let into your lives those influences which are going to shape them in a wrong way, which are going to debase them. And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, is what kinds of things do that and how we determine that and how this applies to worship and how it works itself out in our music and that sort of thing. So pray, because this is a work of God. Anybody can believe intellectual truths. It is a work of God to make us love them. It is a work of God to regenerate our hearts so that we have faith. It is a work of God to increase our love, to strengthen our inner man. So pray, fill your life with the Word of God, and then keep out of your life those things that are gonna target the koilia, that are gonna encourage that. Because that's the difference. Some cultural elements, by virtue of what they are, target the affections. Some cultural elements, by virtue of what they are, and that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, target the passions. You never want to target the passions, because they don't need any encouragement. We want to keep those under check. Okay? So, good question. Yes?
Well, I asked you this yesterday, and you said we were going to talk about it today, and I think I understand what you're talking about. But when you said, explain what we feel about God.
Yeah.
That you're talking about,
so, right, when I say what we feel about God, some of you are like, oh, I'm a little worried about that. Okay, I'm glad, because that means you're thinking about making distinctions, but when I talk about in a hymn, how does this make us feel? We're talking about biblical right affections based on the truth. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I understood. I just wanted to clarify
and make sure. Ma'am. Yes.
And obviously some kind of music going on, but I'm wondering if you would it be wrong to go to something kind of like that and have like the whole individual thing going?
Yes.
If you balance that out with, you know, with more like stuff
you have to do. You know, in that particular case, you know, like, again, I didn't participate. I was there for educational purposes. There was more wrong with what was going on than merely the fact that it was individual. You know, I just use it as an illustration. So is your question, is it okay to have both in a congregational worship service?
No, I'm wondering more like, would it be...
I think more like have blended worship, some contemporary, some... Good question. We'll explore that tomorrow. Because we haven't even got into, really, music itself yet. Okay, we're just talking abstract right now, and we need to get our ducks in a row concerning what music is, what it does, before we can get there. So hold on to that. We'll get there. Okay, some things to think about maybe? Chew on. Tomorrow is methodology. It's more flexible. It's not my intention to make you dot your I's and cross your T's like me, or dot your T's and cross your I's. Either one of them. But what I want to get you to think is, how does all of this that we've been talking about, how can I consistently flesh it out? And one church might look a little different than another, but as long as they are both fleshing it out, you know, consistently and correctly, then